Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the story of America's bloodiest prison, told by the people who lived it, both inside and outside its gates. The brutal history, as you've never heard it before, from its origin as a slave plantation to its gradual growth as the bloodiest maximum security prison in America. To those outside its gates, it's known as Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola. But to those who have spent time inside its gates, it's known as Bloody Angola.
Come with us as we take you through the gates and give you a first-hand look at not only the stories of the stabbings, rapes, executions, escapes, and murders you won't find on any TV show or the internet, but also the murders, abductions, attacks, and hostage situations of the staff and their families, otherwise known by the convicts as free people.
Bloody Angola is a comprehensive, no-holds-barred podcast. It takes you on a journey through time, from its inception as a slave plantation to America's largest maximum security prison, where 80% of its population will die inside the wire.
Get mentally prepared. Sit back and listen as we cover these stories in detail.
In ways that you've never heard before, from people that lived it, breathed it, and died with it. Bloody Angola. Warning, Bloody Angola is a podcast covering actual events and is intended for mature audiences.
The subject matter discussed in no way reflects the personal opinions of the host or sponsors of this podcast.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of Bloody
Angola,
a podcast 142 years in the making.
The complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
And I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton.
And boy, are we excited to bring you this one.
Team.
Oh, Chase team members, only for you.
Only for you. For your
enjoyment.
Yeah, well.
Or
the James Bond, I was thinking of that song, For Your Eyes Only.
Oh, yeah.
So this for your ears only.
That's right, for your ears only. And we are happy to bring it to you. It's an episode that I personally wanted to do very, very bad. It is on the notorious serial killer, Sean Vincent Gillis, and we're titling this Gillis Uncut. We have an interesting perspective here in that Woody was actually an officer during the Sean Vincent Gillis killing spree, I guess you could call it.
Right.
So we're going to have his perspective of what was going on with law enforcement during that time.
It was a crazy ass time.
Really was, because there wasn't just one, there was two running around at the same time. I'm going to be more the perspective of a citizen that was really paying attention to the headlines and kind of knew something was going on with all these killings that were happening in the Baton Rouge area during that time.
Y'all, I was going to throw this in there real quick, and I know most of y'all know this. Obviously, Sean Vincent Gillis is a serial killer, okay? And to be classified as a serial killer, it's a very specific definition. It means you have to kill two or more people that are unrelated crimes, okay? Meaning, like, I didn't come home and just kill my, five people in my family. You kill different people, different times, different places.
Yeah.
So, and Sean Vincent Gillis is a legit serial killer.
One reason that I want to do this is because there were a lot of victims, 8 confirmed murders committed by Sean Vincent Gillis, where those victims did not really get due justice as far as not only who they were, but because there was another serial killer running around that got a lot more of the headlines,
right?
Their cases were kind of buried in I feel like those people deserve to be recognized.
Right. And we always say that about the victims, and I know Jim and I both are huge victims advocates. Unfortunately, most of Sean Vincent Gillis's victims were high-risk lifestyles, et cetera, and we'll get into all that. At the same time, naturally, Derek Todd Lee was killing more high-profile victims that got garnered most of the attention.
Yeah.
Media attention, anyway.
Were you a detective at the time?
I was a detective at the time. On the serial killer part, y'all, they've been studied, okay? Back in, when Ted Bundy came out, the FBI, which is the nation's leading law enforcement agency, who are not only responsible for enforcing the law, they are responsible for studying crime and why it happens, et cetera. So they develop profiles, or now you've heard of the shows, Criminal Minds, et cetera, FBI profilers. Well, this is a real deal, and they went into the prison systems, and they developed this, 5,000 questionnaire that covered a person from the time they can remember as a child to the time they got incarcerated for their crimes. And they did it for all the crimes, but they did it for murder first. And they would give them carte blanche. You can't get in trouble if you participate in the study. And so they would fill it out, and they take it back to Quantico and have their scientists study it. And they were able to break serial killers down into 2 types of groups. Basically, preferential and situational. I think Sean Vincent Gillis is more situational, where I know Derek Todd Lee was preferential, but we'll get into that. But the profiles show whichever category you fell under, you had certain characteristics that you started out as a kid, and almost all of them did the same things until they graduated to being serial killers.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. And serial killers, when it comes to my, obsession with true crime, if you were to specify that into one specific category, it would be serial killers, something that's always appealed to me. I was a big reader of Anne Rule books when I was a kid, who was an amazing author who covered serial killers in detail. She actually worked with Ted Bundy when they were in college, and I think that sparked her interest in it, and she made a career out of writing about Green River Killer, Ted Bundy, and Stranger Beside Me is probably one of the best books I've ever read.
I met one of Ted Bundy's survivors at Crime Con. I can't remember her name in 1 year, but she certainly had an interesting perspective. So on Sean Vincent Gillis, Jim doing what he does best, the historian, the researcher, he came up with stuff. He researched the shit out of it. So we're going to tell you about Sean Vincent Gillis' life and times and then the crimes, right?
Right. Sean Vincent Gillis was born in 1962 in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, to Norman and Yvonne Gillis. And Norman Gillis, now, he left the family soon after Sean was born. So it became a one-person family. His dad had major alcohol problems, pretty much left mom and Sean at a very young age. He was still a baby.
And going back to the profile, y'all, that fits right into it. Most of the ones in his group had a single-parent household. Alcohol or drug abuse was a problem.
And in high school, they described him as kind of a bright kid. He attended private schools throughout his upbringing. His mom actually worked at a news station in Baton Rouge. Didn't make a ton of money, but she loved her son, and she put him through private schools. Struggled to do that, but made it happen through his upbringing. And he maintained average grades. Classmates would describe him as somewhat odd. He was not what you would necessarily call a popular student. Would be kind of a track in his life. He was a guy that would disappear into the fold.
Right.
Just someone that could be in a crowd of people and you never even recognize he was there. Right. He's a Star Trek freak.
Right.
Kind of nerdy.
And just an average appearance. You wouldn't think about him one way or another, but with the glasses and just like flower on the wall, you know, lost in the crowd.
Very
average Joe, maybe.
Yes.
After he graduated from high school, Gillis got a job at a convenience store. And when he wasn't at work, he spent almost all of his time on his computer looking at pornographic websites. But his love of computers would play a key role in his pornography addiction later in life.
Keep in mind, folks, the time in which this was. The internet was just coming around. Before that, if you wanted to consume pornography, it was Playboy magazine.
Yeah, you had to wait in line in a convenience store and get jugs or something off Penthouse off the rack and go up to the counter. And I'm not telling.
Not that we've ever done that.
and act like you're old enough to buy it, right? So, but yeah, no free porn on the internet.
It was the advent of the internet. It was just kind of coming out. For a guy like Gillis who had what you would classify as an addiction to pornography, this was the holy grail, the internet, because you didn't have to go buy magazines. You could search websites and all this porn would just pop up.
If you remember when the internet started, you didn't have to pay to look at porn sites and stuff like that, and you could find anything. This before they start like really putting any kind of regulations on it or anything like that. I mean, you can find anything, including dead bodies.
That's right.
Pornographic dead bodies. Necrophilia, if you will.
How important is pornography in the profiling of a serial killer? Well, I remember a interview distinctly in which they interviewed Ted Bundy, and they said, what do you hold as the key to what turned you into the serial killer you were? He didn't hesitate, and he said pornography.
Absolutely. You know why? Because they masturbate, and they use the porn to masturbate, and it's the fantasy, but certainly everybody masturbates, right? Except for me and Jill. But for most people, when masturbation can take care of it, these certain individuals get in their brain with the fantasy, and they include rape and murder and stuff, and they masturbate until the masturbation doesn't work anymore, and they act out upon their fantasies. But Sean Vincent Gillis, in his early stages of the internet, not only had the obsession with porn, but he had an obsession with looking at porn of dead bodies and crime scenes. He was obsessed with it.
Yes.
And I mean, that's what hit his jam. So you already know this fucker's a little twisted right there.
Yeah. He's not looking at Pamela Anderson.
Yeah. 99% of the people who look at porn don't search up dead bodies.
And so there's your early warning signs that something is wrong. Now, as we discussed, he was tight with his mother, almost to an obsession.
Another part of the profile.
In 1992, his mother, Yvonne, decided to take a new job in Atlanta. She asked Sean to come with her, but he did not want to go, so she agreed to continue to pay the mortgage on the house so he would have a place to live. At that point, he was 30 years old and was living alone for the first time in his life, which is a key, because anything he could actually act on, now was the chance. Mama didn't live at home anymore, and he was depressed. You know, he was totally depressed that his mother left him, although she left him a house, right. Basically gave it to him, so he had no responsibility.
Right. So let's go back to the profile. You're 30 years old. You're living on your own for the first time. You're mad at your mom because that obsession part. Okay. 30 years old people, that's an issue. But you're alone. So now you don't have to hide. If it was magazines, still back in the day, you didn't have to hide your magazines under your bed or in your closet or whatever. Now he could just view porn anytime he wants to, walk around naked, masturbate, wherever.
Right? Act out, all of those sorts of things. He acted out so much, in fact, that neighbors that they interviewed after the, you know, obviously after he was caught, said they would see him late at night, sometimes in his yard, basically howling at the sky like a crazy. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more health issues with the dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health. What she discovered is that the way many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that could be wrecking our dog's health. And this is true for many premium brands. Fortunately, she found that just by adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformations in their health. She's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone can do this same thing to see incredible changes in their dog's health. Now, my dog, Phoebe, is the queen of our house, and I can tell you that her health is extremely important to us. She is a part of our family. I watched the video, y'all, and I was amazed by the things I didn't know that could impact your dog's health. This 20-minute video is packed full of tips that I've already started with my dog, Phoebe. I'm noticing more energy, healthier skin and coat. If you want to keep your dog healthy and happy, go to badlandsfood.com/bloodyangola and watch Catherine's video right now. Again, that's badlandsfood.com/bloodyangola.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Crazy person, yeah. And cursing his mother for leaving
because he's 30 years old, y'all.
30 years old, y'all. This ain't a 14-year-old.
This next part really goes into the profile. All right, almost every serial killer at some point either gets caught being a peeping Tom, naturally they're masturbating, getting more fuel when the pornography doesn't work anymore. And Sean Vincent Gillis got caught by his neighbors peeping in the windows of a young woman who lived next door. They saw his friends coming and going. Sometimes they could smell weed burning from his house on hot summer nights.
So these were things that he was doing now that his mother was gone, and he's starting to act out maybe some of these things, like peeping, being a peeping Tom. Many of Gillis's neighbors quietly wished that he would move away. So they interviewed him after. They were like, man, they knew this guy's crazy. Didn't think he was a serial killer, but they knew he had a screw loose. Right. Simply put, he gave him the creeps. Y'all, this is not a run-down neighborhood in Baton Rouge. This is in what they call the Garden District in Baton Rouge. Right,
and really nice homes,
yes,
and neighborhoods. And not to really say bad one way or another, but if you live in a trailer park and it's not a good lighting, whatever, and you're peeping in somebody's window, you may not ever get caught. The Garden District, yeah. People are paying attention. Yeah. And if you're not, you know, if you're walking by at nighttime, they're going to want to see where you're going. In 1994, Sean met Terry LeMoyne through a mutual friend, and they had similar hobbies, and they bonded quickly. Terry found Sean to be an underachiever, 30 years old, working in a convenience store. not throwing shade on the convenience store workers. I'm just talking about Sean Vincent. She found him to be an underachiever, but She also found that he was kind, or thought he was kind and considerate, and she helped him get a job at the same convenience store where she worked.
So even Sean Vincent Gillis could find love. There was someone out there for him. Actually, Terry Lemoyne was also a big Star Trek fan. That was one of the things that they shared in common and would talk about. But Sean, much like his dad, was a heavy drinker. And Terry noticed that he drank a lot. She was also confused by his lack of interest in sex, a problem she eventually accepted and blamed on his addiction to pornography. So she knew that he was jacking off in front of a computer. Right. She didn't realize it was dead bodies he was looking at. She thought it was,
or that he was
porn
peeping in windows.
Or that he was peeping in windows. But believe it or not, they eventually were together 10 years before he got caught. Never had sex. And I think there's a reason for that, and I'll cover that later, my thoughts on that, and then get your expert thoughts on that. Right. What she didn't realize was that Sean Gillis's interest in porn changed and became an interest in rape, death, and dismemberment of women.
I mean, you get that shit on the dark net now, but you can't Google fucking a dead woman, right?
Yeah.
And it didn't give away to you. Back then, you could have got 100 hits probably.
It was no holds barred.
Yeah, it was dialed up first of all.
Welcome. You've got mail.
Y'all remember that? When that came out.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, somebody wants to talk to me. Check this out. Yeah, I remember those days. Sean is at a place where he has a girlfriend. All is right in the world.
Right.
Platonic, though, relationship. But no sex.
We'll get into it later on, but that's really a cover for him.
Yeah.
Because this is what I'm supposed to do.
We're going to tell you about some victims here, and now it's going to get hard to hear.
There was a lady named Ann Bryan. And look, our hearts go out to these victims, y'all, and their families. And I know there's people out there that love them that are still living in the area today. So, gentlemen, I know our hearts go out to them, first of all, right?
Yes.
And so Miss Ann Bryan was 81 years old, and she was living at the St. James Place, which was an assisted living facility located across the street from the convenience store where Gillis worked. As she often would do, Ann left the door to her apartment unlocked before retiring to bed so that she did not have to get up to let the nurse in the next morning. The facility was not gated at the time, but has been ever since the incident. So Gillis entered Ann's apartment around 3 a.m. At first, he was only going to rape her. Ann Bryan started screaming at Gillis, startled at the fight in this 81-year-old woman. Gillis slashes her throat in an attempt to quiet her. Once he got the scent and the sight of the blood gushing out of her neck, he began stabbing her over and over. He stabbed her some 50 times, almost decapitating and disemboweling a small elderly woman. He seemed fixated on stabbing at her face, genitals, and breasts. Ann Bryan's murder shocked the Baton Rouge community. It would be another 5 years before Gillis would attack again, but once he started back, his list of victims grew quickly. Now, I'm going to tell y'all about this. My great aunt was living in the same place, St. James, when this happened. I was 24 years old, and I had already done my Department of Corrections time. So I remember it like it was yesterday.
You know, when I look at the Ann Bryan murder specifically, there's some keys in there, and one is Gillis. Now, a lot of these details Gillis gave himself in his confessions. It's her fault, right, Woody?
Right.
You screamed. Right. I wasn't going to slash your throat, but you screamed. It was your fault. That's typical of serial killers. They never accept responsibility for what they do.
But also really important on this, this is his first victim. He graduated from Peeping Tom. Masturbation didn't do it anymore. Generally, the graduation goes to the next time they'll break in and steal women's underwear and masturbate to whatever, and until the fantasy doesn't work anymore. So at some point, the fantasy of rape didn't work enough for him, so he was actually going to do it. Now, who to do it better than on what better victim for him to first his first rape? Than the 81-year-old lady he knows is living alone at nighttime. I'm sure he met her at the convenience store at some point. I'm sure he had his eyeballs on her. He was going in to rape her, but he didn't plan it out. He's raping her. She screams.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Get the right car at Reichert.
It's the Reichert Black Friday Savings Event. Get a $500 gas card with the purchase of any new vehicle, only at ReichertKia.com.
Get the right car at Reichert.
We're dealing.
And then he went fucking berserk.
Yeah.
Got the blood. And like they say, once a dog bites you and it gets the taste of blood, they want more blood, right? Holy shit. What did he do? What kind of evil must have been contained inside him? I just came to rape you, 81-year-old lady. I just came to rape you, but now I just mutilate you. Basically cut your head off and stabbed you in your genitals, in your breasts, in your face. Y'all, that's a lot of anger that I don't even think Sean Vincent Gillis knew he had in him at that point that he was capable of, but he did it.
He did it over 50 times. 81-year-old Ann Brime. Our hearts go out to her family for that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And but he went 5 years before he committed his next crime. That tells me he lived off that masturbation fantasy, that murder. Probably scared himself a little bit at that point. But at some point, the masturbation to Miss Ann Brime. It's murder, brutal murder, and rape doesn't do it anymore.
The convenience store in which Sean Vincent Gillis worked at was right across the street from the St. James Place retirement assisted living community. So like Woody mentioned, he probably met her in the convenience store or something. Right across the street it was located.
He didn't, let me tell you this, he didn't just go trying doorknobs and because it could have been a dude, right? And he had his eyeballs on her. I can tell you that from a professional opinion. He had his eyeballs on her at some point. He's like, this is going to be a good one.
Yeah. So let me tell you about Catherine Ann Hall. Now, Catherine Ann Hall was 30 years old. She was a prostitute. Sean Vincent Gillis picked up a lot of prostitutes, right? Something he did a lot. Now, flashback, folks, to he doesn't have sex with his girlfriend,
right?
But he has sex with prostitutes. Right. So he picked this prostitute up in North Baton Rouge on January 4th of 1999. He brought her to a secluded spot on River Road in Baton Rouge, which is a road that the Mississippi River runs along in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, for those of you that are not local.
One side of the road is a large levee separating the Mississippi River from basically all of Baton Rouge. And then you have the road, and then most of it is like cow pastures and stuff on the other side of the road, unless you get to the populated area. But you go past LSU, it's cow pastures and stuff like that, and then the levee's on the other side.
He finds a secluded spot there, and he uses what eventually became his moniker, something that When they would find a murder and they were trying to connect them, this seemed to always come up, and that was a nylon zip tie. He slips that nylon zip tie. It was a large zip tie. Picture almost the size of a rope you would rope cattle with. He slips this around her neck, pulls it tight, and begins choking her to control her. He didn't want to kill her at that point, but he wanted to control her with the zip tie. Well, he freaks out and stabs her 16 times before she died.
To the zip tie thing.
Yeah.
Now let's go back. He's developing as a serial killer. This makes him a serial killer, but he's developing as a killer. He knew the mistake he made with Ann Bryan. He was going to rape her, and she starts screaming out. So he slashed her throat and gets the blood all over him, etc. So, I mean, he still had to make his escape and everything. So he knew the next time he did it, if he get that zip tie around their neck, especially with that long one thing, and that takes probably average of 90 seconds, but they're going to lose the ability to scream almost right away because they're going to be trying to get the thing off their neck, give them some relief so they can breathe. So he knew. He planned this shit. Who the fuck brings long zip ties like that with him? As part of his kill kit, he could control Catherine by zipping it down, right? Now, let me tell you this. I don't give a fuck if you're a prostitute, preacher, business person, whatever. Nobody deserves to be murdered, all right? Prostitutes are generally considered by law enforcement high-risk lifestyles. You certainly are more likely to be murdered or raped or whatever, but doesn't give you a right to be because someone was a prostitute. Catherine Ann Hall has somebody that loved her.
That's right. She had a mother somewhere.
Daughter, mother, maybe a parent. I don't know.
He has a rage about him. So in the first murder with Ann Bryan, he stabbed her over 50 times after he slashed her throat. That is what I call a switch. He has a switch where he does the initial attempt and then he loses it. That switch goes off and he rages.
I call it the demon comes out.
That
he doesn't show his girlfriend at home. He doesn't show his workers at the people in the convenience store. But that demon's in him and it's real.
It appears to show itself the second he gets the sight of blood. So he pulls that zip tie, he stabs her, continues to stab her 16 times before she dies. So get this. Now the demon's taken over, the monster. He post-mortem stabs her another 21 times. And here's something you may not know. He then drives her dead body to a car wash on Gardier Lane in Baton Rouge, where he pulls her out of the car in broad night. We live in the Baton Rouge area. We know where Gardier Lane is, and I know exactly where this car wash is. Let me set the scene here. It's three or four stalls. It's wide open, just like any exterior car wash you would ever see. He pulls the body out of the car, lays it on the ground in broad night, and cleans the vehicle out while she's lying.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Laying on the ground. He's not even in a hurry. All that blood, he's cleaning all that up, probably mad at himself because he raged out and got blood everywhere. But he doesn't even care. He lays her body outside the freaking car. So what's he do then? He puts her back in, probably had a bag or something that he laid her on. He drives to a populated subdivision in neighboring Ascension Parish where he leaves her body laying in the road right in front of a sign that says dead end, posing her intentionally.
That's crazy. So here's how sick you are. Now he's graduating. He's developing, like we told you. He takes her to the car wash, pulls her out, wash off. Now, y'all, when we say car wash, this is not like Benny's or something like that. This is not a drive through. These are the old brick walls with a metal roof, three stalls. You put your coins in. Now, he takes a body out. He's got to get quarters out, put them in the thing, and then get the wand out and hose her down, then put her back in the thing, drive her in the cinch pairs. Him driving her in the cinch pairs shows me he's graduating mentally. He's thought it out. He's like, if I drop her in another parish, it's going to be harder for law enforcement to figure out who did it and who she is and everything else. And but posing her in front of a sign that read dead end.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Now he's almost thumbing his finger at anyone who's working this case in law enforcement. I'm going to make a funny. I'm going to put her in front of a sign that says dead end.
And everybody just thinks I'm a quiet convenience store clerk.
Yeah. Who disappears into a crowd and
that's right.
And all of those sorts of things. So he posed her intentionally.
Yeah. Well, then he goes on the next victim. And again, heart goes out to him. Hardy Schmidt. Was 52 years old. My age. In May of 1999, Sean Gillis was driving through an influential neighborhood in Baton Rouge when he came upon a jogger jogging in her subdivision. Gillis then began staking out the subdivision every morning, and 3 weeks later, he finally saw the jogger again. Y'all, why is he staking it out? Because he's masturbating. He liked the way she looked, and he wants to see her again. When he sees her, he hit Hardy Schmidt on May the 30th, 1999, with his car as she was jogging through Pollard Estates on her morning run. An avid runner, Hardy had participated in the Boston Marathon. According to his confession, Gillis overpowered her after he hit her with the car and wrapped a nylon zip tie around her neck. He put her body in the trunk and drove her to a break park where he raped her. He then killed her and placed her in the trunk of his car for 2 days. Y'all, he even picked up his living girlfriend during these 2 days from work several times, and she commented about the smell in the car, which he blamed on hitting an animal on the way to pick her up. He then left her body in St. James Parish, near a bayou on Highway 61, where it was found 2 days after he dumped the body. I do believe this is the Bragg Park across the street, State Police Headquarters. He's thumbing it in, right? Zip tie, we're going back to it. He's graduated. He knows he's going to get control. He had it in his mind. He brought the zip tie. She comes running through today. I'm going to get her ass. But she's fit. Boston Marathon runner. So, she probably would have whipped his ass. And so he hits her with a car, drives around with her for 2 days and tells his girlfriend, oh, yeah, what's that smell, baby? Oh, I hit an animal. And again, he drops her in another parish, St. James, which is even further away, which shows he's graduating.
Exactly what I was about to say.
Hey, Sean Vincent Gillis was not a dumbass.
Third parish.
He didn't plan his shit out way ahead of time. Now, this time he saw the victim, but he didn't know he was going to see her that day. It's not like Ann Bryan where he fixated on, but he was just going to rape her. This one, he saw her and he was like, oh shit, that's a good potential victim, but he didn't know he was going to see her again. And he did it, drops her in St. James Parish. And if you Chase team member, you're not from here. Holy shit. That's even further. That's towards LaPlace, right? I mean, it's past Ascension Parish.
Law enforcement from St. James Parish, communicating with Baton Rouge, communicating with Ascension. What he's doing is he's trying to make it as hard as possible for these agencies to tie these things together. And I want to offer a few thoughts on this because I can distinctly remember this, Woody, when this happened. I can remember reading the newspaper about this lady. And here's where I think Sean Vincent Gillis was fucking up. So his first victim was Ann Bryan. Ann Bryan caused a lot of uproar due to her age,
right.
And 81-year-old woman, and the horridness of the crime.
Bad.
So it freaked him out, most likely, and he stopped for 5 years. Mm-hmm. Well, then he goes and he picks up a prostitute, kills Catherine Ann Hall, and there's nothing. It's really, I don't want to say it was no big deal, but a prostitute getting killed versus his next victim, which was Harney Schmidt, are two completely different things. Harney Schmidt was in a, you know, lived in an affluent subdivision, had money. She was an athlete. She had many, many friends and family who loved her, and it created an uproar and a media frenzy.
And again, it's unfortunate that, but I've been a victim of myself, working murders and homicides. You want to solve them all, but if you have high-risk victim like Catherine Ann Hall, and then it's the same day you get another high-profile case or an ape and acute political murder comes across your desk. I mean, you're going to work. I shouldn't even say, but it's the truth. You're going to work what garners the most attention.
Yeah.
And now, when he did Harney Schmidt, holy shit.
Tons of media attention.
Right.
I was locked into it. And look, y'all, now there are murders going on in Baton Rouge of women a lot because there's a whole nother serial killer running around, but nobody knows that yet.
Right.
There's just bodies popping up in 1999 everywhere you looked. Okay, so that was 6 months after he killed Catherine Ann Hall. So now the time frame's getting close. As investigators, when y'all are looking at this stuff, do y'all pay attention to the time frames and these dates?
You do, but let me kick it back for a minute. So like Catherine Ann Hall and Ann Bryan being 5 years before, Catherine Ann Hall being dumped in another parish, in Ascension Parish, she probably, they fingerprinted her and she's a known prostitute, et cetera. And they may have reached out to Baton Rouge, but no, they're going to talk to people in the area where she was dumped and no witnesses, no whatever. And shit. They might not even contact the Baton Rouge, to be honest with you. I'm sure they had to notify family or whatever, but are they going to go down Plank Road and interview everybody to see who picked her up? Probably not. Cinch Paris got other shit to do.
I mean,
that's just the way it works.
It's
unfortunate. Harney Schmidt, Wicked Wheel gets the grease, baby.
Different deal.
There's no difference in the victims, but certainly different victims are going to garnish different amounts of attention. The time frame, not only the closer it gets together for law enforcement, but it goes back to the news media. They're like, oh, we got this body's popping up. But like you said, there were other bodies turning up, and most of them were influential women who had families that cared about them, et cetera. And this is all going on at the same time. So now you got a gumbo of dead bodies from different classes, and it's a shit show.
Total shit show. Many different agencies involved because he's dumping them in different parishes in 6 months.
It shows his intelligence level. He's graduating to different levels in his murders, also in the frequency, but he's smart enough to know the farther away I dump him, the better it's going to be for me. But riding around with the body 2 days, dead in the trunk, I guarantee he masturbated over that body. He's getting off on it because now, for the first time in his life, he's smarter than everybody else, including the cops. So he's getting it. The longer he could ride, if he could ride away riding till she was mummified in his car, he'd have never got rid of her because as long as she's in there, hey, I'm a genius, right?
That's
they can't
right.
Catch me.
6 months in between Catherine Ann Hall and Harney Schmidt's murder, and 6 months later, he strikes again. Joyce Williams was last seen on November 12, 1999. Her body was found behind a levee on River Road in Baton Rouge on January 22nd of 2000. According to his confession, Gillis picked her up on Highway 19 in Scotlandville. He rode around for a while, singing along with songs on the radio. He brought her to Port Allen and killed her with a nylon zip tie before bringing her to his home, where he dismembered her and delved into cannibalism. He later put her body parts in garbage bags and a Xerox box and brought her to Iberville Parish, where he disposed of her remains.
This is so crazy, y'all. So remember, he killed Harney Schmidt. This big uproar, right? So he goes back to what? A high-risk victim. Scotlandville, y'all, it's a tough neighborhood just north of Baton Rouge. He gets Joyce Williams. On these prostitute victims, why do you think a lot of serial killers choose prostitutes?
No one cares about them. No family or limited family.
More important, check this out. More important, this motherfucker couldn't get anybody else to talk to him. He gets Joyce Williams in his car because she's thinking she's going to get some money. And he's riding around with her singing songs, yeah. Right? He can't get anybody else to get in the fucking car. He couldn't get Hardy Smith in his car. He had to run her over.
Yeah.
Right? So he gets Joyce Williams in. Oh, baby, come on. You working tonight? How much? Well, let's take a ride. But going back to it, zip tie, boom, did it again. Y'all, he drove across the bridge. That's West Baton Rouge Parish, right? So he's getting out of the area and killed her with the zip tie, but bringing her house, Jim.
He brings her home, y'all, and literally cuts her up. He dismembers her. There's a reason why we called this Uncut. Right. And it's number one, because we're giving you all the gory details. But right. Number two, he started enjoying dismembering his victims. He brings her home to his house to do it. He also delved in cannibalism. He was quoted as saying he ate her nipples.
That's crazy.
Ate her nipples. He later, after he's done dismembering her, put her body parts in garbage bags, and then he puts that in a nice Xerox box and brings her to yet another parish, Woody.
Iberville Parish, which is even further across the river, y'all. So he's gone Ascension Parish, the first one, which is neighboring to East Baton Rouge. Then he goes to St. James. Then he goes to Iberville. So he's spreading it out. Now, again, there's another killer. Or the cops didn't know it was another killer at the time. But bodies are popping up in Iberville Parish. The other killer was taking the women and dumping them in the water.
And you better believe he knew there was another one out there.
He's smart.
Who is this guy? Why is this guy taking my headlines? And I didn't kill her.
Yeah. Not only that, he's thinking, I dump it out in Iberville Parish. They're going to think it's the same guy.
Yeah.
They're not on my trail. I can ride around dead bodies in my car. I can take my time at home and eat them. It's crazy. It just goes to show that he's totally, totally developing, graduating.
So, y'all, we're going to go ahead and look, when me and Woody started this, we did not realize until 30 seconds ago that right. This was going to be a two-part series.
Right.
What's happening right now is we're freestyling and our minds are working and we're just flowing. And when you do that, things come to your mind that you just can't say in an hour. We want to give these people the due justice credit they deserve.
They're not going to rush because these are victims. They were real live human beings. They're not just statistics. And what Jim is saying, so Jim did all the research and we're sitting down. We don't discuss these cases before we talk. We flow. That's how I think what makes us sound so good and Bloody and Gold and everything. But if we rushed this, it would be doing a disservice to these family members, to these deceased. Sean Vincent Gillis, fuck him. But what we won't make you do is wait another month or something, right, Jim?
Yeah.
We've been doing it like 2 weeks or something.
Yeah, yeah. A week or two, we'll release the second part. I would say probably look for it the first week in...
Yeah, the first week of October.
October.
Right. So apologize about that, but I promise you, you will thank us at the end for doing... Y'all, I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, at least... 6 more in-depth pages. That's without us freestyling on it. But this story needs to be told. We're not going to rush it. Your RA Chase team members, and we appreciate you. Love and appreciate each and every one of you.
Yeah, we really do. Thank you for being Chase team members. And we'll be back shortly with that second part of Gillis Uncut.
Gillis Uncut, baby. And I'm Woody Overton.
And I'm Jim Chapman.
We're the hosts of Bloody
Angola,
the complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
A podcast 142 years in the making. Peace.
Dead Monday. Oh,
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.